The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, everybody? It's the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. Hope everyone is doing well. It has been a minute. That is my fault. Had a little bit of a scheduling thing and a family thing that came up last week that prevented us from doing a true show, but we've missed you. We've got a lot to get to today. I'm Anthony. He's John. We're going to talk NFL Combine. We're going to talk T. Higgins and the franchise tag. We're going to talk about a lot of different things. I had what I thought was a clever title to the podcast here. I don't know what happened to the title itself, but regardless, it got deleted somehow, some way. I'm Anthony. He's the guy who has been at the NFL Combine. We've got some exclusive video footage from him. John Sheeran, man, the myth, the legend. How are you, sir?
I think the reason why the title isn't there is because, like, we've been gone kind of for so long. We have so much to talk about. There's not a single title or phrase that can encapsulate everything that we are going to say. I guarantee we're not going to have any dead air here because a lot has happened since we've talked to all of you guys. And yeah, I'm excited to be back. We're in the longest February of the last 4 years now. So we got one more day of February to go and let's get to it.
That's right. The happy birthday to the people that have their birthday on a leap year, because, like, technically, if you're, I don't know, 20 something or something,
how
you're
does
actually
that work?
Like four. I don't actually know. But it's
sometimes you celebrate, like, today, sometimes you celebrate on, like, March 1st. Or, maybe.
I don't know. I don't know how that whole thing works. But if you're new here, welcome to the program. We go through a lot of different stuff. We have a little fun, and you can get this show on your favorite streaming platform for the most part. Maybe we should join the ranks of the whole Twitch deal. I don't know. We'll explore that at some point. But for now, we are on YouTube, and you can subscribe to that. Underneath John there and that Cincy Jungle icon, there is a show icon, the Orange and Black Insider. Click that. Click the subscribe button. Click the bell to be notified when we go live and when new content is available. And, of course, you got to hit the thumbs up on the video if you like what we're doing there. And then if you like the audio side, well, you can get the video side on the Cincy Jungle Facebook page, too. So go like that one. We stream also to a couple of different Twitter accounts, the Cincy Jungle one, mine, and the show account. So go, if you like tuning in there, go check it out. And then, of course, if you like the audio side, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all of the major ones, we are there. I am rusty at this. It has been about 2 weeks or so. I don't know, a week and a half, but we're going to get to it. And in the meantime, go subscribe in one of those ways. We appreciate the support. All right. Well, John, the big news hit. And of course, that big news is that T. Higgins has been labeled as the Bengals franchise player, and pretty predictable. What's not being predictable is maybe the outcome there. We're going to talk a little bit about pros and cons and where we sit on what the Bengals should do, because hell, everybody and their mother has been doing that at this point. Twitter is ablaze with all of that kind of stuff. And of course, I know you're dying. All of you out there are dying to hear what John and I have to say about this freaking thing. So, John, tell us a little bit. What did you hear, if anything, and do what Duke said about this situation in Indy at the combine?
I mean, what I heard is, I think, what all of you guys heard. He was speaking in front of a, you know, speaking in front of an audience, and I think he had a statement pretty well prepared. It wasn't like last year where he said, you know, if you guys want your, if you guys want a T. Higgins, go, you know, tough luck, get your own, you know, like essentially F off. It wasn't essentially like that tone of a voice, because the situation is slightly different now, because T. Higgins was under contract last year. Now he's quote unquote under contract, but they just technically just have his rights for this season. He obviously hasn't signed the franchise tender yet. And the franchise tender was placed on him mere hours after the salary cap was announced for the 2024 season at $255.4 million, which is over a $30 million jump from last year's cap. It's the largest just by volume or just total jump in recent history. So the Bengals, knowing that, you know, the tag was going to be $22 million, that's only $8 million less than the jump from last year's salary cap. And also factor into the fact that next year's tag, if they were to tag him, is only going to be about 120% of this year's tag. And you can already kind of project that if the cap went up this much this year, it's going to go up a decent amount next year. So I think from what he said about, you know, we tagged T. Higgins because we want to keep T. Higgins, he's a good player and he makes us better, it's all the mundane things. But I also think they tagged him immediately because they just have kind of been through this before, not only with T negotiating with him last year, but also just probably with his agency and his representation. And I think as soon as they realized that they had plenty of space to tag him and to make sure that worst case scenario, he's here for week one, he's going to play on the team in 2024, they were going to have the space and the comfort and the cash and all that to do that. So they're just like, you know what, we just don't want to do these negotiations again. Nothing's going to come out of this. Apparently, from what I heard, the offer is just, it's too far out of their range in terms of guaranteed money. And that's pretty expected too, considering the agent that the Bengals are dealing with and, you know, kind of what we kind of heard from last year and how there was no real progress with that. So I think they just kind of accepted it. They said, we're not going to waste any time. We're going to tag him. And obviously tagging him so early in the window does create the possibility that teams can now legally, quote unquote, legally negotiate a trade for him. But there are complications with that too, which is why he didn't want to get into any speculation about what this means going forward. All that it really means in concrete is that the Bengals have T. Higgins' rights for the 2024 season, and that's how they're going to go from here. And everything else that happens from now on is really just, it's anyone's guess.
Yeah, so 255 plus million is the salary cap space calorie. And then, of course, you've got the Bengals with a little bit under 51,000. And as you said, close to 22 million for the cap number with T. Higgins this year. So those are the financial implications of him being tagged this year. So, you know, John, we kind of knew some of those numbers. We knew what was happening here. Now, I think you and I need to kind of talk about the pros, cons, and where we stand respectively on this, because I think there's a pretty big dividing line on things with this. And quite honestly, you know me, I see gray areas. I see merits to both sides of the argument. I mean, let's just run down before we could kind of give our own personal stance on this, but let's just kind of run down some pros and cons. Pros side, of course, keep a talented guy. A guy that Joe Burrow clearly has comfort with, and a guy who has been productive and consistent through the first 3 years of his season, of his career, rather, close to 70 catches, right? You know, averaging right around 70 catches, 1,000 yards, and 7 touchdowns through those first 3 seasons. Last year was the big dip. Of course, that being a con, some of the injuries, what happened last year. Of course, there's the quarterback injuries, but there was some inconsistency from T going forward throughout the year last year. So, you know, I mean, that's one of the cons. And then, of course, on the con side, the cost for keeping him this 1 year if you cannot reach a 1 year deal. But again, you look at the pro side of things. I mean, you have an insurance policy in place in an offseason where you are facing quite possibly some really high turnover at the wide receiver position because of the future being cloudy with Tyler Boyd as well. So, I mean, money being one aspect, keeping him being another, of course, protecting yourself being a pro side with, you know, having him for a year or being able to trade him and get something for him at this point if you feel like a long-term deal is unattainable. So there's some pretty obvious pros and cons, unless I'm missing some so far on this one.
No, I think he hit the nail on the head there. Obviously, the $22 million in cash and cap, it does impact free agency, I would say, a little bit. I think that eliminates at least one potential impact player that you can sign if you didn't tag him or if you were to trade him immediately as free agency begins. So that's something to consider about just the general idea of, you know, maximizing the roster as a whole. But I think to your point, not just the connection and the history with Burrow and the offense, the fact that Tyler Boyd is also a free agent, and I think it's pretty assumed that he's probably not going to come back to Cincinnati.
Right.
It would be different if they drafted a T. Higgins last year in the second round. Instead, they drafted two receivers on day three. One of them, Charlie Jones, barely played the receiver position in the regular season. Andre Yoshivis, I think a lot of Bengals fans are excited about the potential that he is, and I think he flashed, but I don't think anyone should be comfortable with him being in line to be the number two next to Ja'Marr Chase. It creates a need, a definite need, at the receiver position, because you cannot enter the draft with Yoshivis and Jones as your presumed two and three next to Chase. There's potential with them, but they didn't have a contingency plan for this entering this process. I think they always assumed that Higgins was going to be, again, like they were going to have his rights entering free agency, so they didn't have to deal with any of this. So the pro of tagging him is obviously you enter the draft knowing that if they do get a chance to draft a really good receiver that they can replace Higgins next year, then they can go ahead and pull that trigger because it's probably going to be a wise pick anyways because this is a really good receiver class. But if they didn't have T on the roster at all, then they would enter the draft absolutely needing that. Or you have to probably spend a pretty penny on a replacement for agency. And at that point, I don't know why you wouldn't have just tagged T in the first place and then entered the draft with that. So that's a whole cloud of everything in that. And really, just the whole conversation about tagging and trading him, it's all about timing. It's all about what you're prioritizing when it comes to when you want to do this, if you want to do it at all. Because if you were to trade him immediately, again, that would open up cap space for, again, more free agency spending. Obviously, you would have to sign a receiver at that point, but you could probably fit in another signing at another position that you wanted. But if you were to wait until the draft, then you could potentially use that pick that could be a higher pick if you were to wait that long because the team might be desperate at that point to give the pick that the Bengals won. Then you could use that pick to, you know, appropriately replace T for a cost-controlled receiver. And, yeah, like, you'd still have enough, you know, money to spend in free agency beforehand. So I think the pros do outweigh the cons here with tagging him instead of just obviously just letting him walk in general. But this conversation about is a trade imminent? Are they even interested in a trade? Are the offers going to come in? Are the offers going to be what they want? Like, all these things are going to, you know, it's a fluid situation that's going to develop over the next couple of weeks. But we have to remember, this is still a franchise that doesn't proactively shop its players. Nonetheless, it's best players. And T. Higgins is one of their best players. I think they've made that very clear of their stance on him. It's just the timing of this tag. It opens that door, and these pros and cons have to be considered with it.
Here are some of the things that we know based on the current situation with T. Higgins, who he is as a player and everything, as well as who the Bengals have historically been when it comes to trades, et cetera. Teams will be interested in trying and have likely been calling the Bengals about T. Higgins and likely giving some deals that could be viewed as somewhat lucrative. T. Higgins, I think, wants to remain a Cincinnati Bengal long-term. I think Joe Burrow wants him long-term. I think there's good rapport there. And despite how last year went, despite some of the injuries that you've seen, mostly last year, here and there throughout his career, I mean, he's still playing 14, 15 games a year in the regular season through those first three seasons when he was a pillar of consistency. I think Burrow wants him here. I think the team wants him here long-term. It has to make sense. The Bengals also, when it comes time to trading a player and one that they have, number one, placed this franchise tag or have this known high value or high regard for, they got to get a godfather type deal to ship a player like that. And so we saw it with Carson Palmer, where they were just ready to just let him sit and not play football anymore until the Raiders gave all kinds of different things for them that they could not absolutely say no to. And it was a player who refused to play for them. Now, I don't see T. Higgins being a player, and maybe I'm just too close to the situation type of thing, but I don't see T. Higgins being of the mindset that I'm not going to play for this team if I'm going to play on the franchise tag. I think it's okay. Well, I mean, stinks. It's not what I wanted, but I will show up. I want to, you know, and this is kind of the crux of my stance. Look, I get the money situation. I get that it handcuffs you a bit in free agency, potentially getting outside guys, maybe re-signing other players, that sort of thing. And I think the flip side of the argument is, you know, the Bengals, one of the positions they have drafted well is wide receiver, particularly in the second round. You can say Chad and Darnay Scott and Carl Pickens was a second rounder. T. Higgins. So T. Wide receiver and running back in the second round have been kind of a goldmine position for the Bengals. They have done very well overall at those spots. So I can see where someone would say, well, you can just maybe draft another guy. But here's the thing, John. Does anybody remember the offseason going into the 2009 season? Does anybody remember the offseason going into the 2016 season? When the Bengals lost one or two very valuable wide receivers that they had high regard for, Hush Panzada being one back then. And then this in 2016, Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu, which were part of this explosive offense, both guys were part of these explosive offenses. Granted, Palmer was hurt in 08, but still, those were players that had rapport with the quarterback. Those were systems that were built around those types of players, and the Bengals struggled for years to try and replace, particularly when it was two at the same time that left, Antonio Bryant, Lavernius Coles, and the list went on and on and on until finally they're like, we got to draft A.J. Green, Terrell Owens, we got to draft A.J. Green and just start this thing over. Then they started it over. They got it going again with Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu. Those two walked, and you had Brandon LaFell and who was it, Bins, and I mean, they had all kinds of guys going in and out of there that kind of handcuffed the offense. Now, the stats were still there. A.J. Green put up stats, but the wins were not. And the Bengals had a pretty successful 09 season, but it still took them another year. 2010 was pretty much a disaster after that. And then they had to rebuild from there. And then we know what happened after that playoff debacle in the Steelers, and those two guys left from the wide receiver room. The Bengals reeled. And this is a team, when T. Higgins is healthy, Jamar Chase is healthy, and yes, Tyler Boyd, and he may be gone. But if you have those two guys, this team and this offense can be explosive, and there is no doubt about it. You lose Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins in the same offseason, and you're risking drafting a guy, you're risking bringing in a free agent that doesn't have the same rapport that has been built up with T. Higgins and Joe Burrow. I worry about that, man. And I look back to those two seasons that I referenced, and again, maybe it's not my money. I said this before. It ain't my money, so maybe I'm a little more freewheeling with it than other people. But if at the end of the year you have a championship run, whether you actually hoist the Lombardi Trophy, you come close again, that sort of thing, and T. Higgins is a big part of that once again, I think you kind of say, well, man, that's the franchise tag was tough to swallow, but if it got us back to the level and or maybe above where we've been these past couple of years, I think you look back and you go, that was worth it.
Yeah, and I think there's no deception when Duke and Zach are saying, like, we want T to be here and we plan on him playing for us this season. I don't think there's any – like, that in itself, I think, can enhance the trade value because it just creates – like, it makes T look more valuable because he's in the plans. But I don't think they're, like, lying about that. I think they do plan on having him – and Jamar with Joe again, because they know that that's a winning formula. They know there's a proof of concept with that. I think the situation is a little bit different, I think, compared to 2016, even though, like, there are obviously extreme similarities with two receivers potentially leaving and just leaving A.J. Green, which would be Jamar Chase in this scenario. I think the money and the fact that you already have a quarterback now taking up who's about to take up a ton of cap space in the years leading up to this and then obviously Ja'Marr Chase is going to get paid. Like, the money with that is a lot more compared to the 2016 salary cap when you had AJ Green on an extension, Andy Dalton on an extension. Those two were, I think, a little bit more team friendly compared to obviously what Joe Burrow's is and, you know, what Ja'Marr Chase is going to be. So that's going to be a variable that the Bengals have to kind of consider with this, especially because T. Higgins is an asset that I think at the end of the day, if they were to trade him, I think it would net them a pick between like 20 and 40. And I think if they do get, if they are offered like a late first round pick, I think that is something that they would seriously consider at that point. It is a pick that was higher than the one that they used on T. Higgins. So that's, at the end of the day, that is a surplus in value. I also think that even if they do expect him to eventually play, and obviously he will play on the franchise tag, no one actually sits out of the franchise tag unless you are like a star quarterback. He may not practice though in training camp. Like, he may do the Jesse Bates right. route, which is obviously the same agent, so the same, you know, all ritual there, which is concerning considering his importance with the offense and obviously him not getting those reps. Imagine if, like, this is, I'm not even gonna say it. Imagine if the quarterback of the team practices in August, right, and T. Higgins is not there, right? So, like, I mean, that'd be kind of a bummer.
Yeah, put that in the universe, will you, please?
I'm not going to say his name, obviously. I'm not going to say what may or may not happen. But imagine if that does happen, and one of the most important pieces of that offense is not there to practice with him. That would be a bummer. That is something that I think they are not, maybe not fearing, but they're considering. And that's another factor into this. So, because the player right now is very valuable and I think would definitely garner interest from the league, because of the financial implications with this, there's going to be interest and there's going to be at least some level of, like, maybe we should do this, but they certainly aren't planning on just trading him immediately, I don't think, at this point. I think if a trade does happen, it'll be after free agency, and it'll be only in a certain case where, like, if we do this, we know for a fact that we can replace him immediately with a top pick at receiver so that the drop-off is not as significant as it may be, and that there's an immediate contingency plan. Because at this point, the more I talk about it, the less I think that T is traded as soon as free agency begins, and then they just really go into the offseason with a dark cloud over that position.
I'm in agreement with you. I think a lot of people are saying, oh, he's going to get traded in the free agency frenzy if he gets traded in the first couple of days. There's a possibility of that. I see it more likely as a draft weekend type of trade. When they see how the board falls, when they see who they can get, when they have seen what holes they have filled in free agency, that's where I see them saying, okay, you know, now, again, it's a very conservatively operating franchise in terms of how they pay players, how they operate. And, you know, they're not going to have their hand forced. And so if they are going to move a player of this caliber, not only did it have to be a sweet deal, but it has to be in a situation where they go, we are totally comfortable with how we've set up our team and haven't had our hand forced on this. And now we can kind of have our cake and eat it too. I want to add, you know, Bill here writes, Bill B513 writes, do we view him as injury prone? I don't really view him as injury prone, but the reason I pin this comment, John, is I go, okay, well, are we even having this conversation if there was a noticeable dip in production from last year? Are we having this debate if T. Higgins once again put up 65 to 70 catches, right around 1,000 yards, 6 to 8 touchdowns, and then you go, well, no brainer, you franchise him, and then you say, well, maybe, you know, that's a guy who's worth this money. And I get shoulda, woulda, coulda, and what could have been and what isn't, but I mean, I don't think we're really at that point. If he's showing you four straight seasons of this is who I am, instead of three, which is still real, you know, a solid sample size, if it's four straight seasons of that, I think we're sitting here going, fine, franchise him and let's just hang on to him for a year and let's keep it going. I obviously, I think that dip brings in more into play, but I still view that as, again, based on the sample size, the outlier instead of a possible trend. Will he get nicked up throughout the year? Yeah, he'll probably, you know, the data shows us he's probably good for 14 to 15 games in a year in the regular season, and then he'll give you some good performances in the postseason because that is who he has been.
Pretty much. I think there's a difference between him being Tyler Eifert and him being T. Higgins. So, like, I don't think you go into the season fearing that he's going to be out for an extended period of time But at this point, the expectation is like he's got a lot of soft, you know, tissue injuries that have kind of nagged on him for the past couple of years and have unfortunately sidelined him for a handful of weeks every single season. So and even like even in the games that he has played, like there's just been some times where he's dressed and he may have started, but he didn't finish the game, or he barely even played in that game. And the important thing here is, like, we know what the offense looks like with him, and we know what it looks like without him. And without him, like, I think the drop-off has been as significant as it was even when, like, Ja'Marr Chase was out. So, like, the value of him in this offense is the reason why, even if he does have that injury history, there's an importance on either keeping him or making sure that you replace him properly and, you know, effectively. So, yes, I do think that the injury issues are why they're especially not willing to meet him and his agent in terms of like the actual meat of whatever this deal is. It probably wouldn't affect him on the open market because teams would be desperate to get a receiver of that quality. Injury history be damned. Yep. But because the Bengals are familiar with this, they know his medical better than anyone, and they know how to treat him and everything like that. That's a risk that they would have to consider the most because they have the most information with that. And that's honestly why the tag makes a lot of sense here, because it's an opportunity for the Bengals to see, is this going to continue? Is this going to get worse? Because obviously the older you get and you're dealing with these soft tissues or these hamstrings, they will you know, regress as your career progresses. So like it may potentially get worse, or like maybe he balls out and at that point you really can't afford to keep him, or maybe you just tag him again. You just do this whole thing in a year. So that, I think that's an element of why the tag makes sense. And yeah, like even if he is injury prone, quote unquote, I think you could still count on him to be a significant contributor for most of the season.
Yeah, and I do think, I mean, even though he picked it up towards the end of the year and he and Browning had that great game against Minnesota and a couple other performances, it also is, you know, there was a little bit of an on-ramp, so to speak, ramp up of Browning getting accustomed to the system switching and doing all of that, and that hurt T's numbers too a little bit. So, I mean, Burrow and him just have a rapport together. You know, the good news is there's not really a terrible decision in one of the three pathways that they choose, whether it's long-term extension, keep him for just 1 year, or trade him. There is risk involved in each one. I think the riskiest to me is to trade him and try and roll the dice to find a similar caliber player that can dive right in just as a rookie like he did. Because I'm assuming it would be a draft pick that the Bengals would use there. I mean, obviously they would maybe supplement with a veteran somewhere in there, but you know, it's riskiest to me to assume that they're just going to, even though they've had a good track record with drafting wide receivers, that they will just get a guy that jumps right in and gives you 70 catches and 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns as a rookie, and then hey, here we go, we're just charging forward and you know, the system's working. I do think also a lot of people are looking at, of course, his agent representation and how this played out with Jesse Bates. And, you know, again, I just think the Bengals as an organization much more highly value wide receiver than they do safety. They've shown time and time again that they pay wide receivers. They pay multiple wide receivers at a time. Sometimes they let them walk, like the 2 years I referenced there, but you know, more often than not, they value those offensive skill position guys. And that's been proven. Another guy, though, as we transition off of T. Higgins, another guy that has some big questions about him is a big guy who was recently seen hanging out with Joe Burrow and Sam Hubbard, Ja'Marr Chase at a Phoenix Suns game. It was the Lakers and Suns, so they were all kind of hanging out. You, good sir, and I want to give my guy some props. We've got a couple of quotes from both a Bengals staff member and an incoming prospect that has been linked to the Bengals. A couple of quick snippets. You, sir, as we tee up this one for you here, Duke Tobin, you had a chance to ask him a question at the combine.
Yeah, so it was like Duke's podium session, and I was curious about, you know, DJ Reader and his status as not only a free agent, but a free agent who's currently, you know, recovering from a pretty major surgery. And I was curious about the complications of those negotiations or those talks right now, because they can negotiate a new deal with him at the moment, but I was curious about, you know, like what the injury would impact with that. So this was Duke's answer upon asking that question. Here, I'll pull it up.
Oh, I got it right here. I got it.
Oh, cool.
Questions on TJ Reader and how are we handling that with the injury? Shame he got hurt. You know, he's a big piece of our defense. He's a big piece of our leadership core, a big piece of what made us a really good defense in past years. He kind of keeps the whole unit together. So, yeah, are we talking to him? We are talking to him. He's in the building every day, you know, rehabbing, trying to get himself in position to have another successful season. He's been through this injury before on the other side, so we think he's going to get through it and be just fine. But we're talking to him like we are a lot of our UFAs and seeing if there's an opportunity to get.
So, some big news there. It, you know, playing the hand a little bit. Obviously, they want to be careful about it with the injury, John. But it seems as if the Bengals are still highly interested in bringing DJ Reader back in some capacity.
And, I mean, they should, just because not only of who he is, but what they have aside from him at defensive tackle, which is practically nothing at this point aside from BJ Hill. It's an interesting decision, though, considering not only the injury history, because this is like his second torn quad in 4 years, he's also going to be 30 years old this year. And that's typically the cutoff, not just the age, but he's going into his third contract. It's an area where the Bengals have either avoided or they've lowballed guys who are entering that phase of their career. And this is the reason why I think a Reader re-signing is likely in that, because unfortunately for him, like, he would probably make more on the open market this year than he did 4 years ago if he was healthy. He's not healthy. He might not be able to pass a physical. He's rehabbing as fast as he can right now at the Bengals facility until he can no longer do that in March. But, like, it just sucks because this is essentially Larry Ogunjobi all over again. Like, he tried to sign a deal with the Chicago Bears in 2022, and he couldn't pass a physical, and he lost down that deal. So he had to wait a few months until he could sign a deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't know if that same exact thing is going to happen to Reader, but obviously he would have a ton of interest around the league. I just don't know how much teams are going to be willing to pay, again, a 30-year-old nose tackle who's coming off of his second major injury in 4 years, an injury that typically is pretty damaging for, you know, players at that position at that age. So I think the fact that his market might unfortunately sour a bit gives the Bengals a good chance to hand him an offer that's, you know, less than what they offered him previously, you know, 4 years ago. And it gives a decent chance at a reunion. So it was encouraging, at least, to hear that those talks are being had, and it especially helps considering that he's in the building constantly working as hard as he can to get better for 2024.
Yeah. Yeah. And a guy who obviously is immensely valuable, and the Bengals need to both, you know, for the future and looking ahead, they need to supplement the interior defensive line. BJ Hill has come up with some of the coolest plays we've seen, and it's been a pretty solid acquisition, all things considered. But like you said, things work the best with a healthy DJ Reader and a mix of BJ Hill and Larry Ogunjobi. So the Bengals need to look at resupplying things on that position group. That being said, we're going to transition a little bit to some players we're keeping an eye on this week, and you had an opportunity also to ask a pretty poignant question to he goes by Johnny Newton, right? So one of the guys who I think Bengals fans would love to have fall in their lap, we'll see if that happens. There's been a couple of these, you know, kind of interior pass rush type of guys that every year Bengals fans clamor for and they just don't get there. And so this is one of those guys. So do you want to tee this one up here too, John?
Yeah. So Johnny Newton spoke today, Wednesday, at the combine, as all defensive linemen were in Indy. And he really, I think one of his first questions that he answered was about growing up in Clearwater, Florida, or St. Petersburg. So he watched Warren Sapp growing up, and then he name dropped Aaron Donald, Grady Jarrett. I think Ed Oliver was even in there. But I'm like, he's missing Geno Atkins, and he's been compared to Geno Atkins by ESPN's Jordan Reed. So I asked him, you know, how he felt about that comparison, and he had some thoughts on Geno as well.
Geno Atkins is a dog. Like, everybody knows that. So just being compared to, like, NFL greats like that, I take it to heart for sure. Just to be mentioned in the same conversation as those guys, and I haven't even played an NFL snap yet, I think it's pretty cool.
So, Geno, man, Bengals fans got to be salivating at that comparison and that that situation. How was he? Pretty was it pretty crowded around him when you were chatting him up? I mean, you had
I knew he was
front and center.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, I knew he was coming up at I think 10 a.m. So I was just chilling behind the crowd that was interviewing the player before. And I think him and Devondre Sweat were scheduled to speak at the same time. So I prioritized Johnny, and I guess Sweat didn't come out for another 3 hours. And at that point, I already left. So I made the right call there. Unfortunately for Sweat, he's not going to work out this weekend because, or I guess tomorrow, Thursday, because he had surgery on his foot. He suffered a foot injury in the middle of this past season. He played through it. He didn't really tell anyone about it. So that speaks to his toughness and his ability to even play, you know, sub 100%. And that's a reason, Anthony, why he's considered, in my opinion, like one of the best prospects in this draft, but he's right now not a lock to go in the first round at all because of that injury history and because there's going to be some maybe lack of athleticism testing in there. But you turn on the tape with this guy, and he would absolutely test phenomenally, just like Geno Atkins did. God, that was like 14 years ago now. So, like, very similar size, stature. And we talked a lot about Kalijah Kansi last year as like the similar mold of like the undersized three technique. Newton is happens to be 20 pounds heavier and plays like 50 pounds heavier. Like, he plays with the strength of a Geno Atkins, but he still has that burst. He still has that explosion and that combination of power and quickness off the ball to be a two-phase player in, against the run and also, you know, pushing the pocket in the pass. He looks the most like Geno Atkins out of a prospect I've seen probably since I was really high on Sheldon Rankins, and he hasn't exactly become Geno Atkins, but like Johnny Newton looks very much like that caliber player. So if his medical is fine, I would have no issue at all with the 18th pick being him.
Well, very well might be. And the Bengals mentioned Rankins. That's a guy we talked about as free agents maybe to look at this year. And then, of course, the Bengals showed a couple of years ago some interest in him as a free agent. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But definitely, I think this is one of the positions that is in play for the first round. Now, an interesting report emerged, John, that the Bengals may be in line for a position that not a lot of people are picking them to go after in the first round, and that is cornerback, right?
Yeah, so this is an interesting conversation because so there's offensive tackle, defensive tackle, and cornerback, I believe, is what the report from Jeremy Rao stated as like the interest for that pick. And obviously, offensive tackle and defensive tackle are definitely the bigger needs here. The thing with offensive tackle is there's probably going to be, like, the Bengals have a good chance of not getting one of the five best offensive tackles in this class. They all could go off the board before them. So then you're in a situation where, okay, maybe we would have to go down, like, a grade tier to get the next best offensive tackle, or we could get one of the best defensive tackles, or in this case, one of the best cornerbacks. And I don't think cornerback is like that far-fetched of like they don't need it, because if you are to get a bona fide first-round pick at cornerback, that's more than what Cam Taylor-Britt was. That's more than what DJ Turner was. DJ Turner didn't exactly end the season on a high note. There might be some doubt about him, his ability to uphold being a starter on the boundary. And it's never just about, like, best player available either, right? It's about these guys are tiered in, like, 1A, 1B, 1C buckets. And if you have, again, if you have a 1B cornerback and a 1C offensive tackle, that might be the difference in taking the cornerback over the tackle in that sense. So I think it makes sense as, like, a long-term need, and especially as a guy that could not only compete with DJ Turner but, like, start ahead of him immediately. And also, like, it could just be the situation of how the draft kind of unfolds. They could be in a situation where they take the second cornerback in this class, and he could be someone that they grade within those top 20 picks. And at that point, like, I don't think it's, like, the most outlandish decision possible.
It wouldn't be the most outlandish decision, but I think there would be a contingent potentially that would have a knee-jerk reaction immediately.
For sure.
When you go, you know, I mean, interior defensive line, offensive tackle, tight end, maybe wide receiver, depending on the whole T. Higgins situation. You go, okay, well, you've spent the last 2 years back-to-back second-round picks on guys you felt like would be your starting corner. I understand you have to look at value, and I'm a big proponent of, hey, if you're picking at 18th, and like you said, there are five offensive tackles off the board, you're looking at the sixth best player on your board at a respective position with the 18th overall pick. And you go, that doesn't jive to me.
Right.
If I'm sitting there, I mean, the value to me just is not there. And of course, all of this is based upon what the Bengals do or not do in free agency going forward this spring. But that's the way it makes sense to me, is when they probably have a handful of positions that they have prioritized. They do like to go best player available, not reach, but they probably have a couple of position groups where they're going, you know, this is where we really got to hone in here. And if you're getting down to at the 18th pick, you're getting down to, you know, a handful of guys at those priority positions being gone, that value is just not there. So I that's where I think that this would make sense in a lot of ways, despite knee-jerk reactions probably saying otherwise, if that's the route they went.
Yeah, and there's a clear example with this. Like last year in the second round, I believe the report was Jordan Battle was graded higher, like slightly higher than DJ Turner, but they chose DJ Turner because they had a bigger need at cornerback. So positional impact and positional value and positional need factor into these decisions. It's not just about who's the best player on the board, we have to take him. They took Jordan Battle in the third round because he was by far their highest graded player remaining on the board, even if they didn't have a glaring need at safety at that point. So again, if you're in the first round and let's just say no cornerbacks have been taken, there's a guy from Iowa, Cooper DeJean, Quinyon Mitchell, like both guys I think are going to be first round players and going to be worth first round picks. If both of those guys are there and five tackles have gone off the board, let's say Byron Mitchell, or not Byron Mitchell, Byron, who's the tackle from Texas?
Murphy.
Byron Young?
Byron Murphy.
Byron Murphy, yeah. Wow, third time's a charm. If he's gone too, and like say Newton's medicals is not good, if you have your pick of the litter at cornerback, like go ahead and take the cornerback at that point. You don't want to just, you know, light a draft pick on fire and take Billy Price 2.0 at offensive tackle if you're not comfortable with that. So again, the positional conversations definitely impact how these decisions are made. And I think they're on the right track with saying, we like what we have at cornerback, but I think that, you know, they think they can do a little bit better. And at the very least, they can give DJ Turner competition and just completely solidify that position group, because I guarantee you they weren't happy with just the entire secondary as a whole last year.
Well, who are some of the guys this week that you're looking at? I mean, granted, some guys come and they just interview and other guys come and work out. Obviously, Newton being one of those guys we have an eye on here. And you said, you know, medical have to check out and all that kind of stuff. Who are a couple of other people now that you were specifically in Indy that you're going, man, I really, whether it's on TV or in person, I got to keep an eye on this guy.
I think a lot of eyes will be on, even before he runs, like Brock Bowers' height is going to be a huge conversation. There's rumors that he might be only 6'2", which I think would rub people the wrong way. It could potentially keep him out of that top 12 and bring him back into the conversation with the Bengals. Would the Bengals even be okay with taking a tight end that's short? I don't think it should deter him, but it's going to be a conversation. Offensive tackles and how they run at this point, like any of them, like there needs to be a priority in just speed and explosion at any of the offensive line positions. Marius Mims, excuse me. How he runs, I think, is going to be so crucial for him, because the lack of experience is a huge knock on his resume, but the tape is phenomenal. And if that tape combined with, I mean, this guy's moving like a Terron Armstead,
and
if he's as strong as Trent Williams, teams aren't going to care about him starting only 8 games, and he might not make it to pick 18. But I think the more offensive tackles who test phenomenally, the more likelihood that the Bengals aren't going to get one of those, you know, five best tackles, or B, there's a greater chance that if they do pick a tackle in the first round, it's going to be a guy that gives them an element that they haven't had before. And yeah, I think that position is just going to be under a microscope so much for the Bengals at the combine, considering that it's the most likely position that they target in the first round, and it has to be someone that gives them the ability to defend athletic edge rushers for once in their life.
Yeah, and we had this conversation last episode about Fuaga, right? You know, is he a guy that you can trust on the right side based on, you know, pass rush ability, potentially arm length or lack thereof compared to others? And then how does he test with some of the other areas too? And then, of course, you know, I mean, these guys do the pro days too, but this is kind of that first look at a lot of guys. You know, wide receiver, maybe, you know, I think there's a couple of guys in there that the Bengals may look at because of the situation with Boyd and Higgins that we mentioned earlier. So there's probably a handful of guys there, maybe running backs as well come into play, yeah. Particularly in the 40, the 10 yard split, 20 yard split type of thing. And then of course the 40 yard dash in general, looking at some of those guys, just because the Bengals may want to reassess some things there, whether Joe Mixon is in the picture still or not. So I think those position groups, and then as we mentioned, you know, Newton in the interior defensive line, that has to be a priority. I am curious to see what level of interest the Bengals will show to edge defenders, because I still think that is an area that they need to shore up. Of course, the Trey Hendrickson and Hubbard's been a solid player for a long time, but I think the Bengals just need a little more juice and a little bit more rotational help there too.
Yeah, and they've met, I think, with some of the top guys like Chop Robinson, Dallas Turner, I think. And, of course, they're going to meet with practically every prospect at the combine. But, obviously, there's a distinction between formal and informal meetings as well. So, yeah, that's another one where it's not the strongest class overall, but there might be a handful of guys that could be there at their pick that could garner some interest. You mentioned Mixon. We made it 45 minutes without mentioning his name, but I think it was kind of worth it's kind of worth bringing up the fact that, like, Duke was obviously asked about him and his roster bonus coming up, and the answer was about what we expected, you know, nothing definitive, because, like, I don't think they have any definitive plans on it aside from as soon as free agency begins, or as soon as, you know, tampering begins and whatnot, they're going to be keeping a close eye out on the running back market. They're going to be seeing if guys like Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry enter the market, see what their contracts are. If it becomes too saturated at that point, and then Mixon's deal ends up looking worse and worse, then a decision could be reached, you know, a handful of days after free agency when that roster bonus is owed. But yeah, I think at this point, if there's a situation where Mixon is on the team, there's a situation where he's not on the team, and there's just no definitive plan yet. So I wasn't surprised by Duke saying I don't really have a comment on that at this time.
Yeah. Well, let's start closing up and drop the mic and get out of here. We got through a lot in a short period of time. T. Higgins, DJ Reader, Johnny Newton, and NFL Combine prospects. First of all, John, just want to thank you again. Go give John a follow. John _Sheeran for those clips. And thank you for supplying those to us. Wanted to share those and give you all the credit that you deserve for your great work there and at A to Z Sports, my friend. What you got for us on our way out?
Nothing particularly. It was a really cool experience being at the combine. I think Indianapolis I haven't been in Indianapolis in a while. I think it was a couple of years since we drove up there to go to the UC Notre Dame game, but I never really realized how much of, like, it's almost like you're going back in time 20 years. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but, like, all the signage and, like, the restaurants and, like, the layout of the city, it just screams 2003 to me. And I can't really explain it, but, like, just the certain restaurants and, like, the branding of these restaurants, it's weird in a good way where it's, like, it feels dated, but there's, like, a comfort level with it. So, like, it feels like it hasn't really enhanced in the past 20 years, but I think there's a reason why the combine is always in Indy. It's just it's a cool city. It's a cool spot. I think the NFL likes it. It's pretty low key compared to some of these other, you know, NFL type cities, but getting there is not my favorite because I hate driving through Indiana. It's very windy and, like, they do a terrible job of you know, constructing highways and whatnot, but Indianapolis is a cool spot and it was cool kind of being there again.
Did you get a steak?
So I didn't get a steak, but I went to a steakhouse, not St. Elmo's. There's a steakhouse called Tony's, and Tony's was started by a former host at the Precinct, which is a Jeff Ruby's restaurant. And my family has known Tony for as long as I've been alive, I think even longer than that. So I went to his Indianapolis establishment. I don't think he was there that night, so I couldn't say hi to him. But I had a nice little rigatoni dish, kind of pun there.
I like that.
Yeah. I think I saw some NFL personnel there, but they were all busy enjoying company, so I just left them be.
Look at this from Dan the Man. This video
man, I can't explain it. Like it's like old restaurants and like old signage that like it looks cool. It looks dated, but it looks cool. That way. I don't know if that's a diss to anyone who lives in Indianapolis, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, again, I apologize. This was my fault that we didn't, and maybe we weren't even missed last week. I don't even know, but that we did not bring you a show last week. We're trying to, but with the Three and Out guys did. We're still peppering you with a lot of content, so hopefully you enjoy that. But you know, unfortunately, I went out of town for a family funeral, which is really not that fun. But there was a positive about it, and that is seeing a lot of family members that I had not seen in 5, 10, 15 years or so. And a couple of my cousins are actually, because they lived in Cincinnati for a period of time, are Bengals fans. And one of my cousins who I had not, and I had gone to Bengals games with him when the then San Diego Chargers were playing the Bengals back in like 03. He came out our way from Arizona and we ended up watching it. But that long story short, I got to reconnect with him, which was pretty cool. And my other cousins and all kinds of different people. And he actually was saying, yeah, man, yeah, you know, he watches the show, he checks out the show, and he plays the show for his son and all kinds of stuff. I'm like, hey, man, that's pretty cool. We had been in some contact from, you know, some different things, but not, you know, hadn't seen him in a long time. But it was good to see him and many others this last weekend, despite the circumstances, and laid to rest a really good man, my Uncle Jerry. So in a negative situation came some positives, which is always a good thing. But again, with that being said, I do apologize that we did not bring you a regularly scheduled show last week, but we'll be keeping you up to date. We do have some more stuff coming from Indianapolis. Our guy, Jason Garrison from Three and Out and Cincy Dungle, he's going to be there for the weekend. Your boy's going to try and get his butt out there too. If it works out, we will see. There's also a really neat event on Sunday that we're going to get some access to. And we'll bring you some footage on that. I don't want to spill too much tea on that, but we'll get you some access to that. But thank you, everybody. Tune in through your favorite platform. Tune into the Cincy Jungle podcast channel. Subscribe to it through iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, any of those. And get us on YouTube, the Orange Black Insider channel, as well as on the Cincy Jungle Facebook channel. John, take care, my friend. Thank you again for your work and sharing what you did out in Indy, the work that you did in Indy, and kudos to you.
Thank you, guys.
Take care. We'll be right back.